One of the longest purports in Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, such an important book, the most important book for giving preliminary knowledge of Krishna, which means that it's the most important book for distribution among the masses of people. And actually, many millions of these Bhagavad Gitas have been distributed all over the world. And for knowing Krishna, the science of Krishna in great detail, then Srimad Bhagavatam is most important. And for coming to the highest level, or the with a perfect understanding of Srimad Bhagavatam, is in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So all these books are of unlimited importance. In this most important book, Srila Prabhupada has given a long purport to this verse. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is addressing various misconceptions which Arjuna superficially was possessed of. The misconception of identifying himself with the body. In one place, Srila Prabhupada writes that of all the dirty things in the heart, the dirtiest is the conception of oneself with the body. And from this springs all different kinds of misconceptions. If one identifies himself with the body, then he will think that this, my self-interest is in terms of my body, and he will think that, well, I, among all the bodies, I am the most important body, and therefore cannot accept that Krishna's form is transcendental to all these bodies. You see, Krishna is just someone else, which is grossly offensive. But it seems to be correct. Duryodhana seemed to be a reasonable person. Nowadays, if there was a choice between Duryodhana and Yudhishthira, the people would probably choose Duryodhana, because Yudhishthira is just a dreamy, pie-in-the-sky, philosophical type, whereas Duryodhana is down-to-earth, practical. He doesn't accept all this mumbo-jumbo that Krishna... He says, we just see Krishna among us. He's just an ordinary person. That was Duryodhana's outlook. But in the modern age, it's around the other way. There's a completely ordinary person in our midst, and we take him as being God. Whereas when Krishna was personally present, then even though he showed in so many ways that he is Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but still, persons of demoniac mentality, they could not accept that. Or they were not willing to accept that. So this is a very important point that Srila Prabhupada has elaborated on, that Krishna's form is entirely transcendental. We need some transcendental knowledge to even begin to understand what this means. In the modern age, we use words like transcendental. This word became popularized in the 1970s. When it was used widely, marketed as an adjective for the word meditation, transcendental meditation. That founder of that transcendental meditation died recently. That Yogi Mahesh, something like that. So that word became very popular, transcendental. But what does it mean? Due to Mayavad, people think that the words can have any meaning that you ascribe to them, which is exactly the enemy of true transcendental understanding. True transcendental understanding means to distinguish spirit from matter, to distinguish the supreme from the dependent. But the Mayavadi way of thinking, it attempts to merge everything into one. Everything is all one. So, according to the Mayavada understanding, if I say, I am God, they are convinced that it's true, because everything is God, so I'm also God. And therefore words don't have specific meaning, therefore they say words, words. This famous line of the Mayavadis, when you point out that everything they say is nonsense, then they say, well anyway, it's just words anyway, so it doesn't really mean anything. So everything, superficially they say everything is sacred because everything is God, but what it ends up is that nothing is sacred, because nothing is better than anything else. Nothing is worthy of worship by anything else, by anyone else. I have told this anecdote many times. One, this was, I don't know, so many years ago, maybe more than 25 years ago. I was walking on a street in Patna, which is the capital of Bihar state. And two students approached me and they were asking me, what is this all about? So I was speaking to them. And one man came up and he started listening. And then, as I was speaking, he interjected angrily and said, why do you say Krishna is supreme? He was angry to hear this. He said, everything is supreme, which is it's an illogical statement. Why do you say Krishna is God? Why do you say only to worship Krishna? That was exactly what he said. Why do you say only to worship Krishna? Everything should be worshipped. Why do you say Krishna is God? So there were pigs running around in the street, which is, as those of you who are from India, from the smaller towns, know, or in the back streets, know that this is not unusual. So I pointed to the pigs and said, well, if you say everything is God, then are you prepared to worship this pig? He said, yes. So I said, are you prepared to take the stool of the pig home and worship it? Yes. So to prove his point, he would be ready to worship pig stool, but he's objecting to the worship of Krishna. So see you, what rascaldom that comes from the apparently pious attempt to make everything to say that everything is spiritual. But transcendental, this word has a specific meaning in Sanskritum that is called triguna-atita, beyond the three modes of material nature. But people, they don't know what the three modes of material nature are. Nor are they very interested to know, because this Mayavad, the people, they mix Mayavad with pseudo-bhakti, and then they say, well, it's just feelings, you see. I'm feeling so much bhakti. But then you'll see that they have no idea of who bhakti is meant for. So Srila Prabhupada establishes everything. We find at the end of the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada establishes that the bhaj, this root from which we have the word bhajan, which means worship. Actually Prabhupada says the word worship is not very, doesn't really fit, but for want of a better word, we use it in English. But that is meant only for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. It's not meant for anyone else. It's not applicable to anyone else. We can offer respects to others. We respect others, but Krishna is the object of worship for everyone. That is the constitutional position of everyone, to worship Krishna. And those who do not do so, they do so due to a wicked mentality. Now, people may object that, well, this is just your dogma. It's just like people say, well, if you don't worship Jesus, you go to hell. If you're not a Christian, you go to hell. And then if you're among the Christians, you have to be a Catholic or you go to hell. And the Protestants say you have to be a Protestant in our church, otherwise you go to hell. And the Muslims say you have to be a Muslim, not be a kafir, otherwise you go to hell. So it may seem that we're just using these strong words, but Srila Prabhupada doesn't just present it dogmatically. Anyone can do that. But he gives here pages of explanation why Krishna is supreme, he is to be worshipped, and therefore those who do not do so, they do so due to a wicked mentality. We may say, well, they're just ignorant. But that ignorance, we've become ignorant because we desire to be. Krishna bhuli, seji vanadi bahimuk, atayiv maya tare dayat sangsharaduk. Forgetting Krishna, we have been inimical to Krishna since time immemorial. And therefore we're suffering in this material world. That's another common misconception, that people say that, well, if there's God, then why are we suffering in this world? And that, well, that's the answer. Because there is God, we are suffering in this material world. Because we don't recognize Him. That we think that, well, God, if God means all good, and good means I should have a healthy body, lots of money. So if God is good, then He should give me all these things. And as Hari Vilas Prabhu was noting last night, as we were discussing, the most popular churches are those which offer that God will give you prosperity. The Protestant ethic on which this Western Anglo-Saxon Protestant, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant civilization is based, the Protestant ethic is that if you work hard and honestly, God will give you lots of money. That's like the Karma Mimamsa theory in India. So if you don't have money, if you're poor, then there's something wrong with you. You're not pious. So you should have lots of money, and that's the sign that God favors you. It's interesting how they get all these things when you see that Jesus himself, in his practical life, rejected that idea. And he said it's more difficult for a rich man to go to heaven. What is it? It's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to go to heaven. And he himself adopted a vow of poverty. Of course, this is, we don't want to get too much into thinking about Christianity, but we're just showing how these, the principles which are expounded here by Krishna, and are stated here by Krishna and expounded by Srila Prabhupada, these, it's not just our dogma, but we can analyze everything that's going on in the world according to Bhagavad Gita. There are various systems of study by which we can analyze the world, just like astrology or psychology or historical analysis, and we can attempt to see the world in various ways. Someone who's an astrologer will see, the bombs going off in Delhi. Well, that's because this star's in this position and that star's in that position. And or someone who sees through the eye of psychology, whichever particular system of speculative psychology he subscribes to. When you meet someone, an astrologer will look at you and speak with you for 2 minutes and then say, "Are you a Libra?" Like this. He classifies you according to this. Or someone who's really into Ayurveda, they'll look at you and they'll say, "Oh, you're a Vata." Or Vat Pitta, they'll classify you. They want to classify everything. Or someone's psychology, and then they'll talking to you and they'll say, "Well, you're saying that because I can understand that in your childhood your father used to beat you, and that's why you're behaving like that." Okay, so we try to understand the world through various systems, and we classify. Everyone does this, whether they specifically subscribe to a philosophy or not. Even the people who their life consists of going to work in a factory, coming back, turning on the TV, drinking some beer and watching the football on TV, they also have some philosophy, although it's not really philosophy, but worldview. And therefore when comes on TV, The American soldiers are fighting in Iraq. They say, yeah, kill all those Muslims. And they're just very simplistic, but they have a way of classifying Muslim bad and American good, but not very advanced. But they have some way of reacting, some system of understanding everything that they perceive. So Srila Prabhupada is very kindly, Krishna has very kindly given us, Srila Prabhupada has very kindly given us all these, this transcendental knowledge by which we can understand things according to Krishna's perspective. People say, why should I accept this philosophy? I have my own philosophy. Well, that's true. You can have your own philosophy, and Krishna, he's very liberal. He'll allow you. Have your own philosophy, okay, but you have to take the consequences of it also. Just like someone must say, well, my philosophy is kill the pigs, meaning the pigs means the people, all the normal people in society. So there was a person called Charles Manson. He's still alive. I think he's out of prison now, isn't it? They let him out. They put him back again. They were going to let him out, but there was public protest. They never let this. So his philosophy was kill the pigs. And he meant, you know, just like anyone who didn't agree with him, which meant practically all the population of America minus about 15 people. So he did that, and he had his philosophy, and he's in prison all his life, and actually should have been executed, actually. I mean, according to Vedic understanding, such a person should have been given capital punishment. So you can think, anyone can think what they like, but at the same time, you can't avoid the consequence. Someone say, well, I don't believe in this Bhagavad Gita. I reject Krishna. So, well, Prabhupada said it's our job just to attempt to give this philosophy to others. It's up to them whether they take it or not. So they say, all right, but you have to suffer the consequences, birth, death, old age, and disease, and particularly if one is envious of Krishna, one has to suffer very severely. People say, well, I don't believe that, but you don't believe it, but well, we'll see. You'll see. You'll find out. So, just like the murderer, someone who's got some warped ideas of revolution, like Charles Manson, he might say, "Well, I don't believe the American government can arrest me." His followers were so stupid that they thought he was some kind of god-like, that he could do whatever he liked. It seemed like that to him, but eventually he was arrested and stuck in prison. So he can still go on with his delusions being in prison that actually it's just my leela or something. I don't know what they think, but you know what these people think. But the fact is that he can say, I'm not in prison, or I'm doing whatever I like, or I'm God. But the fact is he has to act according to the prison laws. He's forced. If one doesn't follow the laws of the country, a certain amount of freedom is given. So if one doesn't follow them, then he's forced to follow them with a considerably curtailed amount of freedom, in other words, in the prison. Still in the prison, there's some freedom. I mean, you can, within your prison cell, you can stand on your head or stand on your legs. You have the choice to do some things, but you're not allowed out of the cell except at certain times when you're told, now you must go out of the cell. It's exercise time. So there's much more stricture, much more control. So we are presenting this, Srila Prabhupada has presented this knowledge by which we can understand the position according to what, this is what Krishna says. And when Krishna says, that's actually the fact. When we say something, it doesn't mean anything because we don't have transcendental knowledge. So many times people ask us, what do you believe? But it's a wrong question. The question at the very beginning, it presupposes that what we, anyone can believe what they like, and any opinion is as good as any other, or anyway, I have my opinion, and if your opinion somewhat is somewhat similar to mine, I can accept it. It just gets the whole understanding, the whole conversation is wrong from the very beginning. So if people ask me that, even before they, I don't answer. I tell them, it doesn't matter what I believe, because I'm a tiny living being and so are you. So what, Prabhupada said that, it's not a question of belief, it's a science, we should understand the fact. If someone says to us, do you believe 1 + 1 = 2? And we think about it and say that, yeah, I think I can believe that, but you never know, it might equal 3. So you can think like that. You can think like that if you like, but don't, if such a person, he shouldn't be allowed to build bridges. You make the calculations, how much this column can, how much weight it can hold based on wrong arithmetic, and it won't hold. The bridge will collapse. So, practically, we can say, well, that's one reason people have faith in science, because it has practical application. So when the scientists say that we are offering you a machine, the horseless carriage, you don't have to have a horse. All you have to do is put some petrol or oil-derived fuel within this horseless carriage, and it will go from here to there. So people have faith in them because they can demonstrate that their theories work. But the problem is when they try to, it's true that they can do things which previously were not possible, just like I'm speaking into this microphone and that's being amplified throughout this room, and more recent technological advances have allowed that this lecture which is going on now is being broadcast to about 5 or 6 people in different parts of the world. That was a great advance in technology. I remember they got it ready, sorry for the mundaneness, just in time for the 1970 World Cup soccer that we were able to see for the first time. Of course, in America, people don't care about soccer, but from where I come from, it's the state religion, undeclared state religion. So we were able to watch England getting defeated in the soccer game live. We didn't have to wait for it to be. Previously, they'd have to film it and then they'd play it back. But they did it live. But now, not only great football stars, but even a person as insignificant as myself, or anyone as insignificant as myself, can be filmed and it can be live broadcast all over the world. So this is the advance of technology. So people tend to have faith what scientists say, but we have to exercise some caution here, because when they say alright, we can broadcast this little speech all over the world, okay, very good, but when they say there's no God, I mean, what, on what basis do they say that? On what scientific evidence? And actually there can be no scientific evidence, because actually all the scientific evidence points to the existence of God. Or when they say that the whole world has come into being out of nothing, that's the Christian idea, isn't it? Creation ex nihilo. But practically the modern science says that out of the void came something, and the something banged. There was a big bang. And then there was everything else. Or out of matter came life. Well, they should be able to, that's the point, they should be able to demonstrate it. That was Prabhupada's challenge. That you say life comes from matter, and you've been saying that now for about 150 years. And you always say, well, in future we're going to demonstrate it. Well, Prabhupada would say that the chicken is a better scientist than you, because every day the chicken lays an egg, which, if they keep a rooster, then the chicken will, chicken's egg is likely to be fertilized. In other words, chicken say chicken. From one chicken comes another chicken. Whereas from your head comes all this talk, but not even a, as Prabhupada would say, you make one blade of grass, make one mosquito. You can't do that. You're only talking, only bluffing. So Srila Prabhupada, he gave us this clear knowledge. Yadadit vaj, what is that? Yadadvij vaj yato jnanam. Like the sun rises, we can see everything. But people who are committed to foolishness, matena krishne paratasvatova, mito bipadyeta grihavratanam, adanta gobhir vishatang tamisram punaf punas charvita charvananam. Persons who are committed to foolishness, persons who are committed not to accept Krishna, they won't find Krishna, even though they dedicate their whole life to looking for the truth, but they never find Krishna, because they don't really want the truth. They have an a priori understanding or misconception that everything is matter. They won't admit of a spiritual dimension, or even if they talk about this, the certain physicists and mathematicians, they have this kind of strange love affair with voidistic ideas, Buddhism, because it fits with their perverted understanding of reality, that there is asatyam apratishtam te jagadahura nishwaram aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kama haitukam, that there is no ultimate controller, there is no controller of the universe, there is no absolute principle, everything is simply relative to everything else, which means that ultimately there is nothing of any substance, which means that nothing is real. And they love this philosophy, nothing is real, because then there's no responsibility, there's no one to answer to, and there's no sin, and therefore they get on with the business of simply enjoying their senses. But they have to suffer. This is the point. We may deny there is God, but we are forced to suffer. So the very fact that we are forced to means that there's a higher agent than us. So this point is, that's all I've been talking on while I've been here in Seattle, actually. I often speak on this because it's such a massive fraud that's going on, the whole material world, denying Krishna, forgetting Krishna, and especially all these bogus avatars. It's, where's their leela? Krishna has so many wonderful leelas. Why are people worshipping Krishna after so many thousands of years? Well, he demonstrated that he is Bhagavan. Ananda chinmaya rasa mataya manasu yah praninam pratipalan smalatam upetya leelayatena bhumanani jayatya jasram govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. By his leela, he conquers over the whole world, his blissful pastimes. What are the pastimes of these bogus persons? There's nothing to show. There's simply they have some followers here and there who advertise them as being very great, and by the blessings of God, as a homage to their own foolishness, they have, some of them have become very expert at talking in such a way that other foolish people become even more foolish. And the ability to be to speak in a way that is more foolish than the fools take, oh, he's very great. He must be God. He's speaking. Well, they take it to be intelligent. So this is, what to do about this glut of nonsense? Well, the only thing is really to distribute this Bhagavad Gita as it is, especially, very widely. And immediately anyone who has got even a tiny modicum of sanity or sincerity. They don't have to be super brain, PhD, MSc, but anyone who's just a little bit sane, which is difficult to find in these days, admittedly. But when they read Prabhupada's books, they can immediately understand that this is completely different from all the cheating that goes on in the name of literature and news and all everything in the world, which means bogus. It's a completely tadvag visargo janataga viplavo. It's something completely different. It's revolutionary. Because very clearly, without very very clearly stated, which means we're not trying to, as the saying goes, pull the wool over people's eyes. That means we're not trying to present something which is just so mystical that no one can catch it. People love this kind of thing because people, they love this talking in riddles. This Buddhism is popular with its Zen Buddhism, with its koans. You know this koan? It's Buddhist sayings which don't make any sense, and people love them. It's the most popular or the most famous is that one should meditate on the sound of one hand clapping. It's nonsense, but people love this. Oh, yeah, so very spiritual. They think spiritual means something you can't understand, but Srila Prabhupada presented spiritual means something you must understand. It's not non-understandable. It's absolute. It's completely understandable. It's not pie in the sky spirituality in which you just imagine that you're spiritual while you're getting on with your material life. But clear knowledge of the personality of Godhead. It's so clear. People hate it. People who are not sincere, they hate it, because it's when the personality of Godhead is presented, He is supreme, we are subordinate. Then if we accept this, then we have to bow down to Him. As Prabhupada said here in Seattle to some young man who's seeing Srila Prabhupada's disciples bow down, said, "I don't see why I have to bow down." Prabhupada immediately diagnosed, "This is your disease. You don't want to bow down, but you are forced to bow down. If you don't bow down, you have to bow down to birth, death, old age and disease. You are forced to fall down dead and take another body." So people who are sincere will accept this. For persons who are not, then they're in a very difficult situation. But at least we should understand this and present this knowledge to others, which is why Prabhupada, he lectured again and again and again on these topics, because he wanted his followers to understand these points. One cannot actually be a follower of Prabhupada unless we understand these points, which means we have to hear again and again from Prabhupada. And we have to present this to others also. It's very dangerous if we present Krishna consciousness just as some kind of sentimentality, or some kind of it's Indian or Hindu. Well, that's true marginally, but that's, if we present that as our identity, as our main identity, then how are we to present that this is sarvo padivinir muktam? This is free from all mundane designations. This is actually non-sectarian. People have a hard time understanding this. How can you say it's non-sectarian? Because it's applicable to everybody. And then people say, "Well, that's just your dogma. Everyone says that." Well, then, all right, try to understand this. Try to understand it. Use your intelligence. The Indians who are here now in this part of the world, they're here because most of them are here because of their intelligence. But they have this remarkable feat of turning off their intelligence when it comes to anything religious or spiritual. They think that, well, religion is just a matter of faith, so time to don't apply the intelligence. That's what Sadaputta Prabhu, he analyzed, that Hindus, they have this, they have the scientific consciousness, they're doing, and then they turn it off and they become, they walk into the temple and they become a Hindu. And they walk out of the temple, then they go back to their job and they're a technologist again. So it's they just switch on and they switch over. But Srila Prabhupada presented this, that no, it's a Krishna consciousness, it's not a hobby, it's not a once a week go to the temple and the rest of the time think differently. But this, we should, how to see Krishna in everything without being just some sentimentalist, but to understand the presence of Krishna everywhere. Anyway, I'll finish there. You all have to go to work. 8:30 is the end of the class time, so the time has come. And Hare Krishna. Any question, please? I think you all have to go, isn't it? You don't have to go. No? All right, ask a question. Ask it briefly and I'll give a brief reply, if I can. You don't have a question. All right, so Hare Krishna. Hare Vilas Prabhu has a comment. Question.
When you said that the Hindus have good intelligence with technology, but when they walk into the temple, they turn off their intelligence.
Yeah.
And they become Hindu.
Yeah.
Now, my question is, and I asked this question to Sadhguru himself.
Yeah.
I said, you're trained science for so many years.
Yeah.
How did you begin to believe what Prabhupada was explaining about the construction universe, creation, the existence of God, and also if you read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita carefully, many times Srila Prabhupada will disparage academia.
Well, it's a general statement, but...
Can you repeat the question?
Oh, yeah, okay. Very good. Thank you very much. You're using your good intelligence. I should repeat the question for the benefit of Madhav Gopinath Das, Rasik. Is that... That's Rasika, maybe. That's Mrs. Jayendran Srinivasan. Is it?
Yes.
Rasika. Shiromani. Soumya. That's... who is this? Who is that Soumya? He's here in Seattle. Anyway. Urjasvati. Oh, Hare Krishna. Urjasvati. And Vidur. Okay, so for the... Oh, and for the benefit of all of you sitting at the back of the room who also may not have heard this. That's the statement I made, citing... I cited authority. It's not just my opinion. But the authority is being called into question. Anyway, Sadaputta Prabhu was saying about the two divisions of the brain. He actually explained it graphically to me like this: the Hindu side and the scientific side. And you turn on one side and turn off the other. So then you were saying that you had asked Sadaputta Prabhu himself, how could you take this up when you're trained in science and Prabhupada disparages academia and all these things? Well, maybe I can answer. It is a general question, and I can give a general answer based on a question or based on something which another of ISKCON scientists told me, which is, I can't remember her name just now. Guru Charan, what's her name? Charan Renu Dasi. She's got a PhD in atomic physics, or something like that. Astrophysics. So, And I was discussing with her, and she told me that she was first come to the temple, and she was just, she'd just come a few times or something, and then Dev Amrita Swami was coming in Manchester, in England. And they, because they know Dev Amrita Swami speaks very straightforwardly. So they cautioned him, please be a little careful, because we have this young lady who's coming, who's an astrophysicist. So, you know, please don't be too heavy about the scientists and all this kind of thing. So Dev Amrita Swami came, and he didn't follow the guidelines of the temple authorities. And he disparaged scientists, and he said, one of the things he said is that these astrophysicists, they don't know anything. And she said, she told me at this point, I was convinced. He said, how, she was saying, how does he know that we don't know anything? This, in the Clarion Call magazine that Tripurari Maharaj used to produce, I remember seeing a statement, this was maybe 15 years ago, in which it stated that astrophysicists, there are about 2,000 theories among astrophysicists about the origin of the universe. So when I read that, I thought, well, how many astrophysicists are there in the world anyway? There's probably not many more than 2,000 anyway. So they've all got different theories. I said this to Chan Rain, and she said, yeah, well, some of them have more than one theory also. So it's like the emperor's new clothes, you know. Someone points it. If they're actually honest, they may understand that these people, what we're learning, we don't. It's not really the ultimate. If people are sincere, even after getting programmed in science, if they're more intelligent, then they'll understand this is not all in all. And that, who was that who said that? I Prabhupada said that. That the very big scientists, the ones who are really very intelligent, they can understand that there's God and that beyond this, beyond what we're doing, we don't understand everything, but it's the little people who are like, they're not really scientists, they're dogmatists. And they just say, science, 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 science. And they have great faith in science, but they don't really have a very broad vista of understanding. So I would say it's sincerity to know the truth, which science is supposed to be, isn't it? It's supposed to be a means of understanding everything. But if someone is more sincere, he'll understand that. Well. He'll understand that there's more to what we can see. And what's called, the very first principle of empiricism is actually totally irrational, or the scientific basis of understanding. The scientific basis of understanding is that we only believe what we can observe and what we can extrapolate in our speculation from what we observe. But that is in its, from the very beginning, that's extremely limiting. Why should we presume that all of reality is within the scope of our observation and intellectualization? What's the word? I can't remember. So, the very beginning, the first premise of material science is. It's not very intelligent, actually, to think that rationation, that's the term. Everything is within what we can work out. To think that everything is understandable and that we won't accept anything unless it's graspable by the aroha panta, whatever we can see and speculate on. So the very first principle is not very intelligent, because why should we presume that all of reality is within the scope of our sensory perception and our ability to hypothesize about it? It's an extremely arrogant and stupid premise. Okay, you're convinced now? All right, surrender to Krishna.
have a comment to make.
You have a comment? All right, Mr. Scientist.
Yes, I'm putting my scientist hat right now.
Okay.
So most of science is nothing but a priori theorization, building a mathematical model, and studying the results.
Yeah, all right. Most of science is a priori theorization, building a mathematical model, and what was the last thing?
And analyzing the results.
And analyzing the results.
So everybody starts with their own theory, and then they build a mathematical model.
Yeah, yeah.
And 90% of the mathematical models are not solvable by present means. And there is a term for that. It's called NP-complete. So anything that cannot be solved in the next 100 years is called NP-complete problem.
We're working on it.
We are working.
We don't understand it yet, but we're working on it.
It's not only understanding, even the largest supercomputer will take 100 years to solve that problem. That's called NP-complete.
Mm. All right.
Which means it is not computable. So they use massive...
Then they need to get into another dimension.
So basically most of the problems are not solvable.
Most of the... Well, that's why mathematics is... I was just in Boise, and the parents of Radhika Raman Prabhu, who's famous as a bigger brain than even most of the Indians, made in America, American transcendental brain. So his parents were telling me that he'd come to the attention of the people of Boise as being a whiz kid, and he was in philosophy, and then the head of the mathematics department in the local university came and approached Radhika Raman and said, why don't you do mathematics? Because math and science, math and philosophy, they go very well together. So he did. He had no background except just basic mathematics, but he just got right into that and did math. He majored in math also. And I was asking him, how do they get these children so well educated? He said, we just teach them Prabhupada's books, that's all. And then after that, they can pick up anything. So that's the proof. He didn't have any background, just very basic, and then he went right through in a short time to university level. Pure mathematics. I presume it's pure mathematics, because that's what goes with philosophy. What they call pure mathematics. It's a different usage of the word pure that we have. It means theoretical mathematics. Anyway, Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Bhagavad Gita as it is, ki jai.